Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Rabbi Yitzchak Sprung, and we are going to be doing our first deep dive into a tshuva from Siach Nachum, a very recent sefer from Rav Nachum Rabinovich, Zichrona Livracha. And we're going to be talking about a sugya related to shaving and haircuts during mourning, during Sfira, during the 9 days, basically Chol Moed, anytime that's forbidden on the Jewish calendar. And, you know, it's a good thing for those who aren't watching the video. If you're listening just on Spotify or YU Torah, you can see that I didn't really take Rav Nachum Rabinovich's advice that we're going to see in just a moment. But anyway, before we talk about this particular tshuva, let me just share with you a little bit of biographical information about Rabbi Sprung, and we'll see why he's the right man for the job. Rabbi Yitzi Sprung is a rabbi of United Orthodox Synagogues of Houston. He holds smicha from the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, otherwise known as Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, and a master's in Jewish philosophy from the Bernard Revel Graduate School of Jewish Studies, where he is currently working on a PhD. He previously served as the assistant rabbi of Congregation Or Torah and a rebbe at the Ida Crown Jewish Academy, and as a fellow at the Yeshiva University, Torah Mitzion Kollel of Chicago. Rabbi Sprung holds a Bachelor of Law at Bar-Ilan University and studied at Yeshivat Birkat Moshe in Male Adumim. Forgive my terrible Sephardic Middle Eastern accent, but maybe...
That was very convincing.
Oh, thank you. You know, we have a Sephardic meeting here at the shul, and I've every time I get up there, I say, Shkoyach Tepiro, I know, Chazak Baruch, Chazak Ve'amatz. So I'm working on it. So you actually studied at the yeshiva that Rav Nachum Rabinovich was the Rosh Yeshiva. So maybe you want to tell us a little bit about your experience there, about Rav Nachum Rabinovich. It's our first time talking about him on the podcast. And then we'll jump into the particular tshuva that we're looking at today.
Yeah. So first of all, I did. I had the immense privilege of studying in Male Adumim when Rav Rabinovich was very much at the height of his powers. It's funny you called the sefer recent. Like, it doesn't feel recent to me anymore, but it's certainly more recent than a lot of Sfarim you might reference in this area. You know, it's certainly
we've been trying to move away from 20th century tshuvos. We've been trying to get more Rishonim. We even have one with a gon coming up around Pesach time. So that's my frame of reference.
Okay, fabulous. So, Rav Rabinovich was amazing. If I could speak to just a very brief bio of who he was an actual North American born gadol, which tends to be, I think, relatively rare. He was really a tremendous scholar in the traditional sense, meaning he mastered the rabbinic corpus, just rabbinic literature. If there was something written, he would not have read something probably that was written in the last 20 years necessarily, unless it was specifically shared with him. But if there was something important written about a major topic, he read it, he digested it. He was very simple, both in his mannerisms, meaning the way that he would act was very, very simple. He didn't walk around in sort of in a high-mannered way, very soft-spoken person. And that was his way intellectually as well. Very, very simple, very straightforward. He really cared about the simplest way of understanding a given issue. He was not someone who would only look at the Gemara and the Rambam. Even if sometimes you see in his tshuvos, it's just like, this is what the Gemara says, this is what the Rambam says, and the Ritbaz says X, Y, Z. He actually read everything. So his presentation doesn't necessarily give you what he was looking at. He looked at everything, and then he told you what he thought you needed to know. This is the simplest way to understand the sugya, in his opinion. This tshuva is no different than that. In that sense, he tells you the simplest way to understand it, in his opinion. That doesn't mean you shouldn't read everything that was written about it. He held you should read everything written about any given halachic question, but he wanted you to get to the point and he wanted you to be the most compelling. I remember one time I was learning with my chavrusa. I don't remember what we were discussing, but my chavrusa had like a super bomb kasha. I just remember he said something so ingenious, and we were just sitting there going back and forth. We couldn't figure it out. And I said to him, "You gotta go to the Rosh Yeshiva and ask him what he thinks of this." And he's like, "You think so?" And I was a little bit chutzpahdik, in the sense of I would always go to Rav Novitch. I mamish followed him around like a puppy. When he was walking in between place A and B, I followed him. I wouldn't say anything because I knew if I would say anything, I would sound stupid, but I would listen to the things he was talking with other people and just like try to soak it in. And I was always in favor of going to speak with him about anything. Always go to his shiur, go to his chabura, follow him around, listen to what he is saying, because it's always fabulous and it's always fabulously simple. And I remember my friend went and he took the question, and Rav Rabinovich listened to the question, and he took it in, and he said, "Yeah, but you're putting the period in the wrong place." And that was exactly his way of dealing with questions. Like, don't you know? Like, it wasn't even a question at all. Really, just the intellectual integrity.
It's so matter of fact.
So matter of fact. And it's funny because I think sometimes people think of him as a people say, "Oh, he was a courageous posek," or "He was this," or "He was that." And in truth, I think he was just a very, very truthful person. That's what he really was.
And that truth could lead him to take positions which were not necessarily popular. Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about that? I know we're looking at Siach Nachum. He's, of course, he I think his magnum opus was a Parash on the Rambam. He wrote Malom de Milchama, which was to tshuvas for soldiers, among I think he had something on Machshava. So you want to talk about maybe a little bit about his Sfarim, and then also, even though you said these controversial halachic positions he took did not define his day-to-day, I think it's worthwhile for our listeners to be aware of kind of what were these key issues that he's known for.
So first of all, as you say, his magnum opus is absolutely his commentary to the Rambam, the Yad Pshuta, the simple hand, which is, as again, the name indicates everything you need to know about him. And the way that he writes in the Yad Pshuta is that as you go along in the Rambam, so number one, the Rambam, of course, doesn't give footnotes. He doesn't tell you where he got his sources. So just as much as the Kesef Mishnah from Rav Yosef Karo seeks to give you the Rambam's sources, Rav Rabinovich seeks to fill in sources, especially where there's controversy or it may not have been discovered. Here's a Tosefta that wasn't seen. Here's a Medrash that wasn't seen. A Yerushalmi that wasn't noted. Something like that. He wants to give you the Rambam's sources so you could see what he's quoting. And of course, the Rambam, even though he's written in Hebrew, he's very, very often writing in translation from whatever Aramaic source he's using. And if you see him in translation, you could see what he's actually quoting and citing and translating.
Oh, wow.
One of the great, wonderful things about this commentary is that he undoes questions on the Rambam just by saying, "Well, no, look at the source over here, or look what the Rambam wrote over there." And it wasn't really a question at all.
So it's kind of like the anti-Brisker, instead of a whole chakira, just put the period over there, and then you have your answer.
It is the put the period over there commentary on the Rambam. And anytime there's like a big question on the Rambam, this is the best place to look. I think you have to look here because you never know what he's going to say and show you that, like, oh my gosh, it wasn't even a question at all.
I guess a true scholar knows when a pilpul is appropriate and when you just give a what we call quote a balabatisha explanation. The balabatisha explanation many times is the pshat and the correct explanation. You know, we
And it is
derisively call it that.
He actually grew up on Reb Chaim Brisker's Chidushin, meaning those were some of the first things he actually learned and learned by heart as a teenager. It just wasn't his derech. That wasn't how he looked at things. But when he was in Montreal, that's how he learned. That's how, I guess, that's how his Rebbe was teaching him. And he did, of course, in addition to that, he wrote, Tshuva Svarim, one for soldiers. Siach Nachum, I asked him once why, I knew he wrote lots of tshuvas. And he was not publishing. And I said, Rebbe, like, can you put out more? Because for me, I always want to know what he thought about something. I always want to know what did he write about this? What was his opinion? How did he think about it? And so I asked him, and I knew he had tons more and still there. I know his family has it. And he said to me, why would I put out more? There are things that are already written about. I don't need to write about them. So if Rav Moshe would write about something, or if Henkel would write about something, he would not put out his tshuva unless he thought there was something necessary anew in it. And it's the same thing with shaving. You see, as we'll discuss, he takes a different tack, a different position than everybody else. And the only reason he's publishing that is dafka because it wouldn't have been worth publishing otherwise, in his opinion. He is known for a very unusual opinion on electricity, that it's like a quasi uvdin d'chol. It's a custom, in his opinion. It's a minhag not to use electricity. I know that this is a major controversy. I personally do not hold of this halacha l'maaseh, even though I really hold, as a general rule, the halacha is always in accordance with whatever Rav Ravnovich said. He has a well-known tshuva about women dancing with the Sefer Torah on Simchas Torah, where again, basically, he says, really, it's usur to dance with the Torah. But if you're going to dance with the Torah, it's no more usur for women than for
Right,
men.
his problem, if I remember correctly, was that it's not a problem of who's dancing with the Torah, it's how you're dancing with the Torah. You know, if a man takes it and he treats the Torah like a prop and acts like a vilde chaya, that's a bigger problem. He says you should put a zakin or zakena in the middle, people dance around it. He says that's even, I think, the original way one was that you used to dance with the Torah, similar to Hoshanis. And he also had positions on gerus, on conversion, I believe.
He had positions on Garrison on conversion, especially conversion of minors, right? He held, it's not a, I'm not going to say, I think it's a controversial opinion in the sense, I think, many Gedolim held this opinion. Rabbi Soloveitchik perhaps even held this opinion that in general, it's a merit to be converted to Judaism. But it is true that this has been a controversial area. That's, I think, an interesting example of something where I don't think he said anything that wasn't said by many other people before him, so much as it was just an issue that was happening. And so I think he felt, and I'm speculating here, I think he felt the need to publish it, even though really you didn't need to look in his Tshuva Sefer to find that approach. That approach really isn't unique to him. But that's a good example. If he thought, it was treating some need, then you could publish it.
Right.
But
So
it's in
coming
general.
to this tshuva here about shaving, you know, it's interesting. After you mentioned that he had kind of these more positions on social issues, women dancing with the Torah, on conversion to modern state of Israel. So you picked a rather more less con I would think less controversial tshuva, which is the question of men shaving during Avelos, during Chol HaMoed. So I'm curious, just I'd love to jump into it momentarily and sink our teeth into the tshuva. Just why did we choose this topic in particular?
I think this tshuva holds two things in it that are very important to me. One is, again, just this emphasis on reading the sugya, reading the rishonim, reading the relevant acharonim in a really simple, straightforward way. What do we think that they actually meant? And what does that mean the halacha is? Rav Rabinovich was very much invested in first principles in halacha. How do we paskin? You find the same thing in Rav Ovadia, who overtly discusses these things on a number of occasions. He really he You could see he held that it was important not just to read simply, but to follow the explicit rules of the Chachamim about how to paskin. And that I personally, it reminds me of him. It elicits, many memories of him, the way he thought, the way he gave shiur. And I think that's one major thing that attracts me to this tshuva, is that this is it. This is his derech. This is how halacha works. These are the poskim. This is what it means. The other thing is that he has in the tshuva, he has a comment about how it was in Europe. That in Germany it was controversial to shave with an electric shaver and whatever modern methods they had, and in Lithuania wasn't particularly controversial. And one of the underappreciated things you get with Rabinovich is this real old Lithuanian tradition of paskening, of how to learn, very much in the vein of, let's say, of an Aruch HaShulchan, who he constantly referenced and he thought was a posik acharon. You always paskening HaShulchan,
That's his truly most controversial opinion, right?
this is truly the most controversial
I feel like
opinion.
all the Dati Lumi, like the Henkin family, Rav Nachman Rabinovich, it seems like all the I don't want to call them more liberal, but like, you know, the more dati lumi religious Zionist rabbis, they have this infatuation with the Aruch HaShulchan. I get a kick, by the way. I'm just going to editorialize for a moment. A lot of people in the more monorthodox world are infatuated with the Aruch HaShulchan, and rightfully so. But I get a kick out of it because you look at the Aruch HaShulchan. I've been meaning to make a list of like top 10, you know, where he goes beast mode on you. I'm thinking of instances like where he talks about setting up a siyum during the 90s to eat meat, and he goes I don't want to say crazy chasrim, but he comes down really hard with harsh language and Muslims saying it's like these other religions, they can fast for an entire month and we can't just, you know, refrain from meat for a few days. So I'd like to see more of that in the modern Orthodox discourse also. You know, we should take the whole package. But anyway, I was editorializing and I digress.
No, I think that's so important. People think I don't know if you would characterize the Aruch HaShulchan as a mikel. I'm not sure. I think he was sensitive to people's needs. But as you say, again, I think the Aruch HaShulchan, intellectual honesty is probably the first thing you get above everything else. And I think Rav Rabinovich, again, is a reflection of that sort of tradition. It's about intellectual honesty first. He was a big machmir in being sensitive to people, which also comes through in this tshuva. You know, this is an important chumrah. You should always be, you know, be stringent in sensitivity to people's feelings and needs in the community. And again, that comes forward. There's so much in this tshuva that's really representative of how he thought, right? It's the simple intellectual integrity. It's the old tradition of this is how we've poskin forever. This is what, you know, he was a litvak. This is what litvaks do. Mm-hmm. And sensitivity to people. I don't know. You get it all here.
100%. And without any further ado, so let's break it down for us. So what is the what are the Rashi Prakim? What are the salient points in the tshuva? I think the shaila is rather obvious, but maybe just spell it out. And then what's his unique approach to addressing it?
Sure. So the Mishnah in Moed Katan and the Gemara both discuss, first of all, the broad prohibition to at least take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, perhaps even to shave. That'll be under review, so to speak. Let's call it. As well as certain exceptions to that rule. Someone who's coming from a big trip or got released from jail, let's say, you know, who didn't have a chance to shave an Erev Yom Tov. But otherwise, if you could have gotten a haircut on Erev Yom Tov, my goodness, what a chutzpah that you're now not bothering to take a haircut on Erev Yom Tov. You're going to get a haircut on Chol HaMoed. Okay, right. And that, of course, is not in accordance either with Jewish law nor with the Jewish value of how we honor Yom Tov, meaning both in the concrete and the vaguer sense that are both required. In general, this has been taken as a prohibition. And there's a great question about whether or not the Gemara was referring to mourning or Chol HaMoed or both. I want to set that aside. In general, I think this is taken to mean if you look up an average halacha book, you know, meaning whatever halacha book was published about the laws of Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed, it'll just say, we don't shave on Chol HaMoed. That's not something we do because the Gemara says so. Okay, the Mishnah says, like, unless you got out of jail, you know, on Erev Yom Tov, you know, there's no reason that you didn't shave on Erev Yom Tov. Rav Rabinovich makes the argument that, in fact, if you take a look at the Gemara, right, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, who just says, like, well, no, if my mustache is bothering me, I'll shave. And you look at the Rishonim, who paskin in accordance with Rav Nachman, and you look at the Magen Avraham, and you look at the Machatzita Shekel, they're all telling you the halacha is that if your beard is bothering you, or if your mustache is bothering you, rather, you're allowed to trim your mustache on Chol HaMoed without it necessarily getting in the way of you eating or something like that. We are lenient on this question. And Rav Rabinovich adds, and here you get both a historical point, right, as well as a halachic point. He adds, why don't they discuss shaving beyond the mustache, right? Everyone knows we poskin, you could trim your mustache, because they couldn't shave. They only had razors. It was a biblical prohibition to shave your face. So all they had was you could trim here and there. Okay, you could trim your mustache. That's what their whole world was until the last 200 or 300 years. And here he says something in a matter-of-fact manner, which to me tells me this is actually what his Rebbeim said to him. I don't think he's making speculation. I think he's actually giving you a tradition from Europe that in certain parts of Europe, they viewed shaving on Chol HaMoed, which was a new phenomenon because there were new non-razor ways of shaving in a permissible manner. They viewed it as a sort of pritzas geder, as breaking down the appropriate manner of acting for a God-fearing Jew. How could it be you're shaving a chlamydia? It's not possible. Whereas, and this actually, if I recall correctly, this was a broader point. But in Lithuania, obviously in the Lithuanian yeshivos, right, in Slabodka and the like, they did shave in these permissible manners. And he basically ends up concluding on a fabulous Rabinovich style note. In reality, there was never any prohibition to shave. The prohibition only ever applied to a haircut, right? You cannot take a haircut on, cannot get a haircut on Chol HaMoed unless you're in the very narrow categories listed in Moed Katan. But so far as shaving goes, if you have a permissible manner of shaving, this is permissible and perhaps even desirable, unless it will be construed as disrespectful.
Right. So this just to back up a moment, you mentioned kind of like the Lithuanian Misora. I was really taken by this contrast that he drew between what he calls the kind of the German community and the Litvish community. He says in Germany, they had to be bochein lahavrid bein ha orthodoxim lebein ha reformim. So therefore, since they needed some way to distinguish between Orthodox and Reform, they were actually machbid not to shave. Whereas he says, in Lita, lifnei HaShoah, hayu shenogu dafka mishum kavod hamoed liskaleach. So basically, in Lithuania, where you think they would take the more traditional side, since they were not threatened by the reform movement, at least to the degree that German Jewry certainly was, there they were able to take a more comfortable, flexible stance on the matter.
Yeah, I took his meaning to be slightly different regarding Germany. Not so much that they were looking for a way to differentiate themselves, right, or differentiate between the Orthodox and the Reform, but that this was the social context. It was a manner of differentiating between the Orthodox and the Reform movements in Germany. And sometimes those things come about in, or most often those types of things, right, come about in ways that aren't necessarily representative of halacha. But we can imagine, I think, being in Germany at that time period and seeing sorts of behavior that are totally not in consonance with halacha or Judaism broadly, whatever the case is. And of course, they're saying, whoa, we would never do that, right? And maybe that breeds something which, at least in Rav Rabinovich's opinion, is not, it's not halachic in nature. It's just how they perceived it. Whereas in Lita, as you say, it wasn't part of the context.
Right, and if you want to even like throw in some of the Hasidic attire over here, a while back I saw a tshuva from the Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher Rebbe, and he basically makes this argument. He's not the only one among the Hasidim that somehow I still have to really comprehend his argumentation. Even though the Gemara says that it's only usser to shave with a razor, there would still be some degree of isser do it even without it. So this whole tshuva still presupposes that may ikker hadin, it is mutter for me to shave without a razor. But if we bring in the Hasidic context, which he doesn't, I maybe because he just thought, it wasn't worth analyzing from his perspective, like you would explain. He's like, it wasn't worth presenting it to the reader. This whole conversation probably wouldn't get that much off the ground. But anyway, I think there's a distinction he draws also between Avelos versus something like Sfira. So you want to talk about the difference between those?
Yes, this is also a fabulous Rav Rabinovich point. This is something I think you find pretty explicitly in Nefesh HaRav when Rav Schechter discusses Ha Rabbeis HaLevi Shekvid Halacha. There are rules to Halacha. It is not just a random chaotic thing that comes into the world and here are things you do and don't do, and it's just I can't understand any of it. There are rules. And there are ways that we treat biblical rules, and there are ways that we treat rabbinic rules, and there are ways that we treat customs. And Rav Rabinovich makes the very simple point regarding Sfira, which he points out again. I could be so biased. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I love him, so you have to take everything I say with that
That's
in
why
mind.
I wanted you on. I wanted a Talmud to speak.
I appreciate that, but I think this is so compelling. You could see that Sfira as a minhag, number one, obviously, as he points out in the Tshuva, you don't find it in the Rishonim the way Sfira is now. I remember looking for this in the Rambam. I actually looked for it when I was in yeshiva. I remember looking for the customs of Sfira. I couldn't find them. Okay, and he says that this custom, which is not universal, to not shave during Sfira, but how could you be more stringent regarding the custom of mourning in Sfira than you would be in the halacha of mourning for a parent. For a parent, after 30 days, what happens is that your buddies come and they say, you look terrible. Go take a haircut. What do you look awful? Okay, and then that's what you do, right? And now during Sfira, what do we have that we're going to extend the custom of mourning even further than we practice the basic law upon which it is based? And that doesn't make sense, right? This just violates the sensibility,
like,
right?
Die a love him and didn't Leos Canidon, you know? You can't learn more than what the origin itself has.
Yes, I think he uses that phrase, like, havavalo nosif, like, losif, like, let's not add to it. What are you doing? There are rules here. This is not anarchy. And again, I love it because it's a very simple point, right? There's a halacha and there's a minhag, and the minhag should not reasonably extend in stringency beyond what the halacha would extend to. And you see this, you know, with children and Sfira, right? Children who we wouldn't do certain things in actual cases of mourning, but when it comes to Sfira and the 3 weeks, we could be stringent with them in a way we would never be stringent with them in mourning. And there's something about that that doesn't quite add up.
Right. And if I'm trying to keep my scorecard over here. So he makes a point, right? He says earlier in the tshuva, so he basically says, when we're talking about, I think he's already talking about shloshim, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, where is he talking about once you're in the 12 months? He's talking about chol hamoed. He's talking about, you know, what's interesting, he doesn't even make the point that you had to have shaved before yontif. Maybe he assumes you did, because I think Rav Moshe makes that point, that you have to at least shave before chol moed to then be allowed to shave during chol moed. And then certainly kavachomer during Sfira, he says, because the norm is that many people shave every 2 to 3 days, that would be an evil. Like, you're going to go into the second days of Yom Tov, and it's going to be counterproductive because then it's not going to be kavod yontif. And he makes the same point during Sfira, that at very least, you know, going into Shabbos, the chumrah of kavod Shabbos should outweigh the kula in minhage avelos. He's not the only one who makes that point. I think it was Rav Lichtenstein, I think, adopted it. I think there's a Radvaz somewhere that talks about that. He's not the first, but he does adopt this point.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that. You know, and I think it makes sense, right? How could it be, you know, how could it be that we're going to tell people that every day when you go to the office, you have to shave? And it would just be totally disrespectful if you would go, I mean, it depends what your line of work is, right? We have lots of people who would never, ever go to the office, who would never, ever meet clients without shaving. And now all of a sudden for Shabbos and Yom Tov, I don't need to shave, right? And this is an evil, right? It's not, again, everything has to be done within the parameters of halacha. I don't want to just say, well, we just looked at things, it doesn't feel right, right? That's not the idea here at all, right? But once you establish that this is really permissible, in fact, it might be moving from the category of something that's permissible to the category of something that is, in fact, desirable or required or needed.
I once made that argument. I gave a shiur about showering on Yontif Bizman Hazeh, and not to recount the whole thing, but, you know, if it's all about Shav L'chol Nefesh, you could basically make the argument that it's Shav L'chol Nefesh for people also to not go, you know, that long without showering. So then I made the argument, it's all tongue in cheek, but I think you could make it sort of that once it becomes mutter, then I'll covet habrios out of concern for the guy sitting next to me in shul. Maybe I'm even chayef to take a shower on yontif, so they don't kill over and die. So it's a similar, it's a similar kind of logic there.
100%. Yeah, it is. By the way, there is a tshuva in this sefer, if I recall correctly. I think it's here, not Malum Be Milchama, where Rav Rabinovich says that, like, nowadays, at the very least, you got to shower every couple of days. This is not right anymore.
And he's advising soldiers in that context.
I don't remember if it was for soldiers or for boys in yeshiva.
Oh, because Malum Be Milchama is for, it's for the IDF, right? Them while they're in Hezder.
So I don't remember which sefer it was in.
Oh, okay. So the context might be important there. But this is, I generally don't like to paskin on the podcast, but I paskin taking showers on a regular basis is a good idea. I think we could have a consensus on that, I would hope. We could debate yontif, but in general. Now, one last point, just as we're wrapping up, we have a few minutes left. There was also, I think, a really important argument he made all the way at the end of the tshuva, where he walks it back just a little bit. He talks about kibud av, I guess not really va'im, because we're talking about shaving one. Well, I guess third. Well, we'll keep it a kibud av for now. So he talks about the respect for one's family minhag. Which I know he has other tshuvos where he, I think he makes an argument that minhag mishpacha, he takes the side that minhag mishpacha is not really an inherently recognized halachic concept. It's proxy for minhag hamakom. But nonetheless, he does take it into account. Do you want to speak about that?
Yeah, so I don't think he's addressing minhag in particular here and how we relate to minhag. I think he's addressing kibud av, and you know, you can call it broadly kavod habrios and the like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kind of says in this tshuva he doesn't really think that the custom of sfira is fully widespread, and you know, proof's in the pudding, it was never really fully widespread, and different places had different approaches and the like. Nonetheless, right, if your father doesn't shave for you to walk around, right, and you do shave, then, you know, people are going to look at you and say, well, that's not right. What's wrong with the son? Or vice versa, right? A father does shave and then the son won't. Oh my gosh, the son's implying his father's not so from. And so I don't think he's making a point about minhag. I think this goes to his broader perspective on the importance of always bearing in mind the purpose of Torah. And he talks about this actually in his book I don't know if you really want to call them philosophical essays, because many of them touch on halacha itself. But he talks about the importance of derechah darchei noam, that Torah is very pleasant for people. And for a posek, you have to bear this in mind at all times. So if you go out into the world and give people advice, which will be, you know, divisive and destructive, you're not doing your job as a posek. And, you know, fighting and machlokas is also usser. You know, so you have to bear in mind... this is sort of like a Rav Schechterism, right? Like every chumrah has a kula, right? So if you're going to be mekel here, right, or if you're going to be machmir to shave, let's say on Chol HaMoed for the second days, just be sure you're not being mekel on Kibbutz Av, all right? Or you're not being mekel on the question of being, you know, divisive or showing yuhara, showing hubris. That like, oh, look at me, I'm so firm, I'm so this, I'm so that, I'm so smart, right? Those are also isurim. So you have to balance that. Sometimes there are competing questions. And I think that's what's happening here. I think he's trying to balance these competing questions, and he tends towards the honor, you know, towards a father, that you should be seen doing whatever your father does.
Right. And his articulation, he says, Ani mor lechol shoel lazus kamosha osa aviv, kidei shelo levazos es aviv, rachmano litzlan. So he says, I advise, even after I just went through the whole sugya and explained to you that maybe may ikar hadin, you would be allowed to shave, you should still make sure that you are not casting a bad light on your father, and vice versa if you take a more makel position. So I think this really speaks, like you said, to Rav Nachum Rabinovich as a posek, how he looked at the full picture. Just in our last minute or so, is there anything else you just our audience should know about Rav Nachum Rabinovich, or you want to, you know, drive home for us as we come into the final stretch? I know it's hard as a Talmud to really how do you sum up your Rebbe in just a few words?
Yeah, that's really, really tough. You know, what I would like to, I think, leave people with is that he is a proof is in the pudding type of author and personality. He was not a charismatic personality. He just wasn't. He was sweet and wonderful and pure. He was not charismatic. And he also is by nature... his writing is not exciting. When he has a big chiddush, he doesn't drive home that this is a big chiddush, because of course the whole point wasn't for it to be exciting and for a chiddush to be a chiddush. It was for it to be compelling, for it to make sense. And he's really someone who, when you read him, whether in his commentary on the Rambam or in his tshuvas or in his essays, which I really recommend, and you know, Koren is publishing his philosophical essays in English now, and I really strongly recommend them. Obviously. You know, this is someone who, the more time you spend with him, I think the more value you see in what he's doing. And then, of course, as the reader, your job is now also to sort of determine whether or not you think this makes the most sense. And don't forget to read all the other opinions about this. You need to come in with a full picture and consider the issue beginning to end.
That is an excellent note to end off on. I think it's really important that we don't just look to who's the most charismatic person, who's the most articulate, the best communicator. Now, obviously, having those skills is a good hei timsa. It's a means to an end of conveying substantive information. We want to know who are the pure people who are just seeking the MS. And those are the people that we should be kind of propping up for everyone to see, not the, well, I'm not going to get on my high horse about influencers like every rabbi likes to rant about these days, but I'm sure you can deduce what my opinions are on the matter. And to our audience, you should be following Rabbi Sprung. He is a substantive person, as you can tell. Rabbi Sprung, what's the podcast that you do? A Parsha podcast, right?
I do a Parsha. You're very thorough, Rabbi Kurtz. I appreciate it. I do the Parsha Pick Me Up, very short idea on the Parsha every single week, 3 to 5 minutes. And I hope if you listen, you'll find something new and compelling.
Okay, well, there you have it. If you want to learn more from Rabbi Sprung, you got the info right over there. Rabbi Sprung, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing insights about your Rebbe and the substance of your Rebbe as well. And I personally look forward to learning a lot more about Rav Nachum Rabinovich in my own Limudim. Thank you so much, and continue Hatzlacha in your Rabbanus.
Thank you so much. This was fabulous. And continue Hatzlacha to you. You know, everybody, I'm just going to say this on behalf of the whole world. Everyone knows you're doing a lot of amazing work. And I really appreciate it and value it. So, Yisher Koach, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.